Blog Talk Radio.
The American walks every day normal going to work. He's walking downtown in Manhattan, and all of a sudden, two planes hit the Twin Tower, and they have no clue why would somebody do such a thing.
The deliberate and deadly attacks which were carried out yesterday against our country were more than acts of terror. They were acts of war.
Radical Islam has declared the war. Radical Islam is at war now with the West.
When I saw the second airplane hit, I knew jihad has come to America.
Wake up, America. It's time to rise and protect our American way of life. You could be offended. In fact, you will be offended by the content of the show. You're listening to UAC Radio.
9/11, Jihad came to the shores of America. Good evening, Radio Jihadists. You're back with ACT Radio Jihad, the patriotic resistance movement. I'm Vito Esposito, and thank you for joining us tonight. Our call-in number is 347-857-1380. That's 347-857-1380. The chat room is open. Please feel free to chime in and ask questions or listen in. And today we have that no-pork-eating America lover, Alan Kay. Alan, how you doing?
Wassalamu alaikum and cheese, my brother, as we embark on our offensive radio jihad.
Salami and cheese to you, and a pork rind as well. How's that? Well, it seems like we have seven Americans who are helping the war on terror in Afghanistan. Prosecutors charged seven men with trying to help the Taliban. Federal prosecutors in New York charged seven men Monday with offering to smuggle millions of dollars worth of narcotics into the United States for the Taliban in Afghanistan, attempting to sell weapons to people they believed represented the organization. The charges laid out in an unsealed indictment allege that some of the men, two of whom are U.S. citizens, sought to aid the terrorist group by offering to help smuggle large quantities of heroin and cocaine into the U.S. and allow the Taliban to later sell the drugs for a profit. The complaint also accuses some of the men, of agreeing to sell surface-to-air missiles, among other weapons, to the Taliban in an effort to protect the organization's purported heroin labs against the American war effort. These guys are peaches, aren't they, man?
True American patriots.
True American patriots, helping the war on terror. Let's help the Taliban protect their heroin trade, protect their heroin labs. Five suspects, Maroun Sadi, Waleed Nasser, Francis Saru Ahisu, Cornelia Datu, Marin Rauf Borema, were arrested in Liberia late last week and have since been transported to the U.S. The other defendants, U.S. citizens Awar Poran and Oded Orbach, were arrested in Romania Saturday and are awaiting extradition. Lawyers of the defendant could not be reached for comment.
Well, I don't know what they got here, but I did not do that.
I can just hear him, right?
Well, reminds me of a story back in July 19th of 2010, Vito, where the White House is revising its Afghanistan strategy to embrace the idea of negotiating with senior members of the Taliban through third parties, a policy to which it had previously been lukewarm. Perhaps this might just be an extension of Barack Hussein Obama's foreign policy.
They're white folks, and then they're ignorant motherfuckers like you.
And talking to the Afghanistan Taliban.
Shit's getting way too complicated for me.
you tell me now, why in the hell would they want to go ahead and negotiate with the Taliban? The very people who are killing our American soldiers. We're going to bring them to the table. It's like the Obama administration bringing in the Muslim Brotherhood into Egypt and giving them a seat at the table. I mean, that is retarded.
Well,
it's plain wrong.
Well, it says it's clear there's a change of mindset in D.C., a senior official in Washington said. He said, quote, "There's no military solution. That means you have to find something else. There was something missing, and perhaps talking with the Taliban is that something else." It's
no
insane.
Military solution. What?
That's
Say
according
it again,
to,
Al.
There is a change of mindset in D.C., a senior official in Washington said. Quote, "There is no military solution. That means you have to find something else. There was something missing." Close quote.
Okay. Am I missing something? Why are our men and women in Afghanistan, why are they there fighting in Afghanistan if there's no military solution? If you're going to allow the Taliban to continue their drug trade, their narcotics trade, the heroin labs, the cocaine, we all know about the poppy fields there. So if we're going to allow those bastards to continue growing these crops and shipping it, this poison to our children and the people of the United States, what do you mean there's no military solution? There sure as heck is a military solution. You bomb the crap out of the poppy fields. Screw those Afghans. Okay, the United States of America is more important than the freaking drug trade that they're poisoning our system with, and they continue to poison, and you mean to tell me we can't fight back? I mean, this Obama administration are real suckasses. I'm telling you, it's getting to the point now where they are out of control. They are not patriotic. They have lost their founding principles. It is absolutely a disgrace. And our men and women are dying in Afghanistan when they're sitting there saying there's no military solution. What a crock of crap this is.
Well, apparently the only solution is the U.S. Muslim Engagement Project, and this might be part of engaging with the Muslims is to win the hearts and minds of the Muslim people. Now, everybody knows that the opium trade, the heroin trade, and the poppy production is done by farmers in Afghanistan because they are so poor that is their only means of income is to raise the poppy at the gunpoint of the Taliban.
Oh, my God. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Oh, my Goddy. I mean.
Well, now would a foreign policy like that have worked in World War II against the Nazis and the Shintoism of the Japanese?
Absolutely not. Oh, no, we would have had, instead of a four-year war, we would have had a 40-year war. At least we would have been nice, huh?
Yeah, chances are good we'd be speaking Sprechen Sie Deutsch right now.
I'll tell you something. You make light of that, and you say, my dad, who was a World War II veteran, always said, if it wasn't for what the Allied forces did, today we would be speaking German in the United States. Now I have to give my father was a Purple Heart recipient. And he hit the nail on the head. Had we not done what we did, today we would be speaking German.
I mean, what is our goal? You take Iraq. Iraq is now, for all intents and purposes, an Iranian proxy state, or will be within the next couple of years. Every day or every other week you hear about Sunnis blowing up Shia as they go to their religious sites, killing women and children, blowing up mosques, blowing up Korans, and all you hear is silence.
Yeah, right. All you hear is silence. And God forbid, heaven forbid, the United States does anything, or one of our soldiers may enter a mosque or a fighting occurs where one of our brave Marines, you know, goes after a freaking terrorist, suicide bomber, whatever you want to call him, whatever politically correct. What do they start saying? Oh, how, you know, how insensitive Americans are. Oh, you're attacking our holy land. Give me a break. And they're blowing each other up. You know what? Screw you.
Hey, we got Doc Miola. How are you, my friend?
Fantastic. How y'all doing tonight, gentlemen?
Hey, what's up, Doc?
How's your poppy crop? How's your opium poppy crop doing this week?
Oh, doing fantastic. I keep it buried in the basement so they can't see it.
Well, I don't know why you're so afraid. I mean, it's okay with our foreign policy. You may as well grow opium, too, or opium poppies.
Well, yeah, that's true, but then everybody will want my stash.
Yeah, but you're supporting the Taliban, and you're showing that you have flexibility and that you want to be one with our military men and women over in Afghanistan. I mean, right?
Yeah, absolutely. This is true. Got my little one popping in. I'm using my headsets here for the first time in Skype, so you have to bear with me if things get silent there for a minute or two.
Okay.
Well, hey, Vito, what number should people call if they want to call in tonight?
Oh, you know what? I'll tell you what. They should call in.
I got it
in.
Right here.
Area code 347-857-1380. Radio Jihad.
I absolutely love that. I'll tell you.
What number again was that? Vito?
Area code 347-857-1380. Radio Jihad.
I think I just call in for the hell of it. You know that? Oh, my Lord. All right, we have another. I got this one. A friend at Facebook put an article up. And it says, Obama's Muslim Brotherhood links deserve second look. Now, I know we've all heard about the Muslim Brotherhood, but what makes this article even better, it was written July 11, 2009, right after Sheikh Obama's June 4th, 2009 speech where he kisses the ass of all the Muslims in Cairo. The speech delivered by Barack Obama may have been intended to strengthen ties with the Muslim community, but it also served to add another chapter to Obama's troubling history with the world's oldest international terrorist organization called the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, keep in mind, this is 6 months, not even 6 months after Sheikh Obama took office, and he gave his luxurious speech, apologetic speech to the Muslim world. The Islamic revivalist movement, Muslim Brotherhood, founded in 1928 by Egyptian schoolteacher Hassan al-Banna, seeks to establish a global Islamic caliphate ruled by Sharia law. Muslim Brotherhood has spawned such terrorist groups as Hamas, which is actually the Palestinian chapter of the Muslim Brotherhood, Palestinian Islamic Jihad, and Al-Qaeda. Despite being officially outlawed in Egypt, the Muslim Brotherhood politicians who run as independents account for 88 seats, or just over 20% of Egypt's parliament. In addition, Muslim Brotherhood has either founded or linked to major U.S. Muslim organizations such as the Council on American Islamic Relations, that would be CARE, the Muslim Student Association, known as MSA, the Muslim American Society, and Islamic Society of North America, to name a few. The Muslim Brotherhood denounced violence back in the 1970s and now claim that they stand for democratic democratic reform, excuse me, but they support suicide bombings and are tied to international terrorist attacks. Okay, so they stand for democratic reform, but they support suicide bombings and are tied to international terrorist attacks. Well, if we're a republic and we stand for democratic reform in the United States, how many Americans of non-Muslim faith have strapped on a vest and blown people up? I'm trying to figure that out. Can you guys answer that? Mama Mia, no Sharia. I think that this is a very profound article from a Chris Carter in June of 2009, who addresses the Muslim Brotherhood. Now, we already know in the United States, although Al, you're going to need to comment on this, because the radio jihadists know that the Muslim Brotherhood they have front groups in America. They're funded by the Saudi Arabians, the Muslim Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood has the Council on American Islamic Relations, that has the Muslim Student Association, the Muslim American Society, ISNA, ICNA, NAIT. But for some reason, there's a denial from the Obama administration, but also this guy named Suhail Khan. Is that his name?
That is correct. Suhail Khan is an associate of Grover Norquist. And at CPAC over the weekend, one of our intrepid reporters, J. Mark Campbell and Tom Trento and Randy McDaniels, had filmed Suhail Khan stating that there is no such thing as the Muslim Brotherhood in the United States. And this is at a conservative conference. When Colonel Allen West was asked about this, he said, well, either Mr. Khan is ignorant or he's lying. One of the two.
Well, if he's supposedly this conservative, he's been in the CPAC organization for how many years? I don't think he's ignorant. I think he's misinforming the American people.
But even worse, he's infiltrated the Republican Party with the help of one Grover Norquist, who is the money man for pretty much the mainstream conservative Republican Party.
Yeah, that's the disturbing thing. You know, and we have said it, though, Al. We have told our listeners that this does not know party lines. There are people on both sides of the fence that have sold themselves out for the almighty dollar, for the old petrodollars from the Saudi Arabians and from the Middle Eastern princes. You know, while we talk about the Democratic Party, it's not limited to the Democratic Party. There are those inside and very influential Republicans, elected officials, who still have their head in the sand, who talk a good game about terrorism, but really fail to act.
Well, you want to explore a little bit who this Suhail Khan is and why everyone should be familiar with him?
I would, but I do want to GJJ did a reminder, but Chris Carter, the author of this article, The Obama's Muslim Brotherhood Links Deserves Second Look, I just want to say that Chris Carter is with the Victory Institute, and our own Gary Johnson Jr. is with the Victory Institute, who you hear him on Wednesday evenings. So, go ahead.
That's right, and you'll hear Gary's show, The Elemental Struggle, on Wednesday evenings from 5 to 6:30, and I believe that's Gary that's in the chat room. So, thank you for listening, and so let's hear a little bit about Suhail Khan and why he should become a household word. Suhail Khan, a Bush administration veteran, has presented himself as a moderate, pro-American voice in the Muslim community. But new voices cast serious doubts on the image he's carefully groomed for himself in Washington. Relevance is that the self-proclaimed staunch Republican has made inroads into the GOP leadership on the Hill, where he's lobbied to block opposition to the Ground Zero Mosque. He's disvalued or understated the threats from Muslim Brotherhood infiltration and the Sharia legal code it seeks to institutionalize in America. And how that's going to start is by way of Sharia family courts. He's downplayed the rising tide of homegrown terror and radicalization, which Representative Peter King plans to investigate next month during his important Homeland Security hearings on the subject. Now, more alarming, Mr. Khan, he helped the bad guys. Because before 9/11, as White House gatekeeper to the Muslim community, he helped facilitate a White House meeting with Sammy L. Arian. You recall Sammy L. Arian is the, you know all about him.
Sammy L. Arian, what? Sam, that name is so familiar. Isn't he something that was, wasn't he a terrorist or indicted on terrorist charges? And he used to teach at the, what was it? Wasn't he a teacher at a college in Florida? Oh, the University of South Florida.
Yeah, he was our sunny sunshine terrorist, Sammy L. Arian, who was charged and did jail time for supporting Hamas. He served time for terrorism and remains under house arrest for refusing to testify in a related terror case. And as a Hill staffer in the mid-90s, Mr. Khan convinced then-House Speaker Newt Gingrich to reserve a room in the Capitol for Muslims to pray. Consequently, according to Fox News, a parade of extremists, including cleric Anwar al-Awlaki, who the U.S. government now hopes to assassinate for his terrorist work for al-Qaeda, led prayers and spoke there.
Now, doesn't Suhail Khan serve as a board, on the board of directors for the American Conservative Union?
That is correct. And he is the protege of one Mr. Grover Norquist, who is the money man.
Oh, my God-y.
Yeah, he's the money man for the Republican Party. So the infiltration of the Muslim Brotherhood and Muslim Brotherhood supporters within the Conservative Party is deep. And David Horowitz compared Grover Norquist to Alger Hiss.
Oh.
And Alger Hiss, he was arrested back in World War II for sedition against the United States for helping the Nazis.
Well, I'll tell you, I just love the way the Americans, especially the Republicans, fall over themselves when you mention the name Grover Norquist. I love the way that they absolutely they salivate. And this, you know, this man worked for Ronald Reagan. Oh, he's such a he's such a Republican, a consummate conservative. He came from the Cato Institute. People may not know that, which is more of a libertarian organization. But Grover Norquist is supposed to be this the one man show for that epitomizes conservatism in Washington, D.C. And it really sounds like that he has another agenda, especially since he's married to a Palestinian. Isn't that correct?
That is correct. That is correct, sir.
Would it be a female, though? No. All right, so you got Suhail Khan, who worked for he served as policy director and press secretary for U.S. Congressman Tom Campbell out of California.
Mm-hmm.
He has close ties to the Republican National Committee, and he's one of the probably, one of the more proactive individuals and leading money, probably fundraising guy, would you say?
Oh, without a doubt. In fact, let's see, Mr. Khan has gone into damage control mode. Last week in a six-page letter to fellow ACU, that's the American Conservative Union, is that right, ACU? Board members,
yeah,
including Chairman David King, he tried to explain away the damning videos, which among other things show him receiving an award from the notorious Abdurrahim al-Mudi, who's now behind bars as one of al-Qaeda's top fundraisers in America. He claims he had no choice but to speak to al-Mudi's group, and that the Bush White House sent him, and he had to go. That was all there was to it. But nobody at the White House forced him to speak in 1999 to the Radical Islamic Society in North America, where he sounded at one point much like a jihadist praising the Mujahideen. And the Mujahideen, they martyr themselves for the cause of Islam and brag about how the early Muslims led death, more than the oppressors loved life. He invoked all the major hotspots of the jihadi circuit at the time. Meanwhile, this is back in 1999, which would be Bosnia, Kashmir, Palestine, Iraq. And Mr. Khan appears to be wiping tears of anger from his cheeks.
You know what's funny, Al? Don't you just love it? He's going to explain this away, and he's going to explain it away just like Dalia Mogahed, who President Obama, the Sheikh, appointed to the faith-based organization in the White House. This one Dalia Mogahed appeared on the TV show Hizb ut-Tahrir in Great Britain. And the media in the United States has been totally silent. Hizb ut-Tahrir is an anti-West, an anti-American organization. They despise capitalism. They tried to hold a couple of meetings in the United States this past year, and they were finally thrown out of Chicago, Illinois. Chicago. Well, all this crap's coming out of Chicago. But they were successful in having an event last year where they wanted to put the end to capitalism and the rise to Islam. So Dalia Mogahed, she didn't have to go on TV with a known terrorist organization, a known anti-American organization. So now how does that differ from Suhail Khan speaking at the behest of Abdul Rahman al-Mudi, who, by the way, was involved in the explanatory memo, which you can find on page 122 and 123 in the book Sharia, The Threat to America, an exercise in competitive analysis report of Team B2, as our friend Gary put in there on the chat room. So if you want to read a very good book, the Center for Policy for Security Policy, The Sharia, The Threat to America, just turn it to page 122, 123 and read the explanatory memorandum that was that the FBI uncovered during a raid. And if I'm not mistaken, Hamas leader named Mohammed Akram and Abdul Rahman al-Mudi were both involved in the writing of that memo. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. And here's an interesting little quote from our friend Mr. Suhail Khan. He said, quote, "What are our oppressors, that means the United States, going to do with people like us? Question mark. We're prepared to give our lives for the cause of Islam." Now, those are heartfelt beliefs. Those are a window into the soul of Suhail Khan. And you do not say those words lightly. They carry a lot of weight. And you mean them in the bottom of your heart. That is a heartfelt belief that does not change. Unless, of course, you leave Islam as an apostate, but Suhail Khan has not done that. He has not publicly denied those statements or condemned those statements that he made. That to me is the most telling thing, because I like to look at the psychology of the people. I like to hear what they say when they think nobody is really listening, and that gives you a window into their soul. Because people can say whatever they want, but a comment, I mean, I'll read it again. What are our oppressors going to do with people like us? Like, he's separate from the American people, the American experience. He's not part of America. We're prepared to give our lives for the cause of Islam. We're, meaning we're separate. We are not Americans first. We are Muslims first or Islamists first, prepared to give our lives for the cause of Islam.
This is Suhail Khan making this statement now, you're saying, right?
Yeah, this is Suhail Khan. And making a statement like that, to me that speaks volumes, because I love America. I love the Constitution. I love the Bill of Rights. I love what it stands for. I love the fact that our founding fathers built or penned a document that gives the power to the people, to the individual over the collective. They built a document that allows the American people to succeed or fail based on their own merits with a minimum of government interference. And that's what's made us a superpower in only 235 years, because when you think about it, we're just a blip on the historical map of all of civilization.
You know, Iraq, you know what's go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go on.
No, you go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Oh, no, that's all right.
The one thing about Khan that's disturbing, and it goes back to this notion about moderate Muslims, how the West has coined the phrase, and I heard Tony Blair say that yesterday, moderate Muslims. But what's really alarming about this is that Suhail Khan was born in the United States. And this is what's frightening about this whole thing. Khan was born in Boulder, Colorado. Now, if he was born in Pakistan and came over at 17 and, of course, memorized the Quran, you can see that he's a fundamental Orthodox Muslim, or as the left likes to say, radical. But Khan's born in America, and here's a guy who has never, ever assimilated. And if he was born into an Islamic family, that means his upbringing has been that way.
Mm-hmm.
Why would he abandon his American principles and make a statement like, we all are? Well, we all infers Muslims as he was speaking.
Well, let's look at his life. Let's look at where he came from. Now, Mr. Khan is the firstborn son of Mahbub Khan, one of the founding fathers of the Muslim Brotherhood movement in America, which, according to a secret founding archive seized by the FBI in 2004, that's the memorandum document that you had just mentioned, is in America to sabotage it and destroy it from within. Now, there is no evidence tying Mahbub Khan directly to the drafting of the archives. However, the same trove of Brotherhood papers lists a mosque he founded in Santa Clara, California, based MCA as one of our organizations. The San Francisco Chronicle reported that at least twice in the 90s, his father's mosque hosted Ayman al-Zawahiri, now al-Qaeda's number two, and helped raise money for him, all while Mr. Khan's father was running the mosque as chairman of the board, as confirmed by the San Jose Mercury News. After the Chronicle and other major newspapers reported that Zawahiri fundraisers in 2001, Mr. Khan relocated from the White House to the Transportation Department.
Oh, he was promoted to a key DOT post. Is that what that was?
Right. And back in 1990s, he also, the father, the leader in his father's mosque, hosted the blind Sheikh Abdul Rahman of the 1993 World Trade Center bombing fame at his Santa Clara apartment. And now, interestingly, Imam Siraj Rahaj, who was a character witness for this blind sheikh, is going to be speaking on the 25th at the University of Central Florida with taxpayer-funded money and at the request of the Muslim Student Association. So these ties run deep, they run generationally, and they are passed on from the father to the son to the father to the son. That
now,
is Islamic culture.
If Suhail Khan is the eldest child, and he grew up in his father's mosque, and he's privy to all these people, Abdul Rahman, the blind sheikh, Qadari, who's with the... who is he with?
He's al-Qaeda. He's bin Laden's number two man, al-Qaradiri, who's still active with al-Qaeda.
So this man has seen and has probably shook hands with and has probably broken bread with these people inside as a result of his father's mosque, or his father being an imam in these mosques. So for him to make this statement, that there's no such thing as a Muslim Brotherhood, I'm kind of baffled by it. I'm trying to read the story and I'm trying to express my opinion here, but this is a very damning statement, and it's very troubling actually,
mm-hmm.
for someone of this stature to make an inane statement like that.
Oh, it's calculated. He's covering his backside. And it even goes deeper. His mother, Khan's mother, Suhail Khan's mother, works for CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, and is listed alongside Ahmed as a member of the executive committee of CARE's San Francisco Bay Area chapter. Malika Khan's chapter last week put up a poster on its website advising Muslims don't talk to the FBI and build a wall of resistance against law enforcement. Now, CARE's National Damage Control said, oh, well, they were just a chapter of our organization. They put up this poster in violation of our rules. As soon as we found out about it, we asked them to immediately take it down. However, he didn't mention that this poster was up on their website for 2 weeks. And does that mean that the people, does that mean that the people at that chapter agree with what was on that poster? Don't talk to the FBI and build a wall of resistance against law enforcement. So imagine what the poster looked like. You have a block of apartments going down the street. You see a guy, you see the silhouette of what appears to be a spy in a black trench coat, and he's looking very suspicious. And then in the words, it says, don't talk to the FBI and build a wall of resistance against law enforcement. Talking about separating yourself, this is from the Council on American Islamic Relations, who sued the FBI, has sued law enforcement, has sued everybody. And this is his mama. Yeah, this is Suhail Khan's mama. So you figure his mama and his papa are knee-deep into terrorist sympathizers, supporting them with their money, with their time, and here in America. And Khan, Suhail Khan, grew up in all this. Now, we are a product of our surroundings. There's no way around it.
Omar Ahmad, who's the co-founder of the Council on American Islamic Relations, said that Islam is not in America to be equal but to become dominant. The Quran, the Muslim book of scripture, should be the highest authority in America, and Islam, the only accepted religion on earth. So you have two situations. You have the father, who's been breaking bread with Al-Qaidari. He's broke bread with Al-Moody. He's broken bread with Sami Al-Aryan. And you have the mother, who's involved in the Council on American Islamic Relations. So, you know, why wouldn't he say that there is no such thing as a Muslim Brotherhood?
And the mosque that his father owned happens to be held in trust by another unindicted Holy Land conspirator, the North American Islamic Trust. But it doesn't stop there. Now, here's where it gets really good, but it's just not the mosque that's a concern. Suhail Khan's father also founded the Santa Clara-based American Muslims for Global Peace and Justice, whose chairman defended the Taliban even after 9/11, according to the Associated Press. So what peace and what justice are we talking about here?
My Lord. Kumbaya. Oh, go ahead. Keep talking about Suhail Khan's daddy. Kumbaya.
So what we're seeing is an evolution in Father Khan's.
Kumbaya.
You better leave that thing to the professionals.
The Sammy Khan, right?
So now Father Khan, he's learned, well, gosh, maybe I better start using some more politically correct words. So he formed the American Muslims for Global Peace and Justice while defending the Taliban right after 9/11.
And so little baby Khan is out there, and he is raising money under the umbrella of the Republican National Committee or under the GOP banner. He's supposed to be this conservative who now is working in conjunction with another Muslim lover called Grover Norquist. They're out there, and they're pulling, probably hoodwinking the American – well, actually hoodwinking the GOP – and people falling over themselves when you say the name Grover Norquist. Oh, my God, it's so orgasmic. Grover Norquist is here. Oh, he's the savior of the Republican Party. He actually worked for Ronald Reagan And for the life of me, I can't understand why this guy is in bed with the Islamic organizations. You know, are they really greasing his palms that much? Are they providing him with that much endowment for him to overlook what this what this country really stood for? And to really, I don't get it.
Well, this will explain it, because despite all these troubling family ties that we just outlined, Mr. Suhail Khan has vowed to carry on, quote, his dear father's shining legacy, unquote, close quote, as he calls it. Now, before his conviction on terror charges, top Muslim Brotherhood leader Al-Moody said he hoped to see this, quote, son of a dear, dear brother, close quote, in the White House one day as vice president. Allah Akbar, close quote.
They are not trying to be part of the American way of life. They are not trying to be part of our culture.
There you go. Noni Darwish says it best. They're not trying to be part of our American way of life or our culture. And here's a guy, Suhail Khan, who grew up in America, whose parents did not, but he hasn't assimilated. He's assimilated in order to legitimize himself with the Republicans and probably gain favor, but this is very troubling. What access does this guy have, and what type of people is he surrounding himself with to deny that the Muslim Brotherhood even exists? It is seditious.
Mm-hmm. And it's all within the conservative party, which is even more. I would expect it in the liberal socialist Democrat party, the LSD party. But to find this in and to have him have his nest, his safe, warm nest within the conservative party, and as a protege of Grover Norquist, the money man for the Republican Party, is disturbing on many, many levels. It's like, where are these people's patriotism?
You know what? And I think it's time that you start questioning their patriotism. When you have Suhail Khan's father, Mahbub Khan, how fitting is that, who helped found certain organizations, including, he's very active in ISNA, the Islamic Society of North America. We know what they're about. And his mother now, we find out, is very involved in the Council on American Islamic Relations. Both organizations have contempt for the United States of America. Both have contempt for the United States Constitution. And both organizations want to see the implementation of Sharia law to supplant the United States Constitution. Well, that's not very patriotic, is it, Al?
No. It's downright seditious, traitorous, and I should be doing jail.
So because this guy, Suhail Khan, has aligned himself with Grover Norquist, we're supposed to back off? Because Grover Norquist is involved in Americans for Taxpayer Reform and for the American Conservative Union, we're now supposed to back off. Wasn't he at CPAC this past weekend talking about Norquist and Khan? I mean, you know, this is incredible, man. Norquist has got an association with Abdulrahman Al-Moody, who is involved in an explanatory memo that was uncovered by the FBI in 2004. You know, this tangled web that's been woven, the tentacles really stretch out pretty far now. There's so many intertwined and inbred people within this Islamic organizations that you don't have to look far, and they all like to proclaim themselves as being moderate Muslims, and boy, don't we suck that up. We lap that up. The media laps it up. Oh, what an intelligent individual. Oh, he's a moderate Muslim. Well, you know what? What's his name? Hassan, who chopped his wife's head off at Bridges TV in Buffalo, New York in February 2010, he was a moderate Muslim. But he never forgot his roots, did he?
No. People lost her head over his roots.
She was head over heels for him. but a bunch.
Well, she was one.
Yes.
She was a head or two behind him.
Oh, my God. Wow, you know, this is very troubling. When you start, we can look at the ties of the Democratic Party. You know, you got Sheikh Obama and his ties to the Palestinians, how the Palestinians helped him during his 2008 presidential campaign during the primary, and then during the actual presidential campaign, where they raised, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars. There was phone banks in the Palestinian Gaza, within the West Bank. But then you look at the Republican Party, and you have to start wondering about some of these the players inside the Republican Party, and are they really committed into protecting and defending the United States Constitution? You know, well, Thomas Jefferson was the most brilliant. But are they really there to help protect and defend the U.S. Constitution?
That is a very good question, and we have a caller. Caller, you're on. What do you have to say about this?
This is Holger.
Holger, how are you?
Holger. Mama Mia no Sharia.
Hi, guys. Good to hear your voices.
Likewise, Holger. Welcome.
I was, as you were talking about this guy and stuff, you know, I thought of the phrase, you know, perhaps you two men are probably too young to remember this, but there was a phrase many years ago called the Great White Hope. You ever heard of that phrase?
Yes, and there was a TV show on with Ken, what's his name, was on that show. Yeah, sure have.
Well, I mean, originally...
Didn't he fight Muhammad Ali? I can't remember.
Well, it was back in the days of Jack Johnson was the heavyweight champion, and there was this racist undertones of how the white folk in America, you know, were trying to find some boxer to take the crown away, and then this I think the guy's name was Jim Jeffries, I think was what they called the Great White Hope, you know, the guy to take this crown back for the white folk and all that kind of good thing. But the whole point is this. You know, with these politicians and so forth in America, it, you know, that's what this is. This is the great moderate hope. I mean, this is just this, you know, it's like a needle in a haystack. You know, it's like there someday there's going to turn up some moderate Muslim who's going to be just like us, except he goes to a mosque on Sunday instead of a church. He's going to be exactly like us, except he goes, you know, he prays on a prayer mat instead of kneeling on a kneeler. You know, I mean, that's they're absolute idiots in the fact that, you know, we constantly project all this stuff onto the Islamists in this world, you know, because we can't rationalize someone doing the things that they do. So there obviously has to be someone in, you know, in Islam who is, you know, loves the flag like us, loves the Constitution, loves free speech, is against Sharia law, is against women having to cover themselves, is, you know, everything we have against Islam, there has to be some Islamist that agrees with us 100%, and that's who we want to, like, pin all these hopes on. And I'm just getting tired of it.
Well, there is one, Holger. Well, actually, there's two that I know of. There's a few more out there. The one of greatest popularity is a Dr. Zudi Jasser, who we've mentioned on the show many times before. And his American Islamic Forum for Democracy. And this gentleman, Dr. Zudi Jasser, he was a Navy officer. And his belief, his ideology, real quickly, is that he believes that the religious practices or the religious rituals of Islam are fine. You just take the politics out of it and the Sharia.
Yeah.
And he loves the Constitution and he loves the Bill of Rights. He just wants to reform Islam.
Yeah.
Well, his Muslim brothers want to kill him.
Yeah. Well, that point and the fact that we try and link it, you know, politically. And I mean, and this isn't just something, you know, new to Barack Obama. I mean, this went on with Bush. This went on with Clinton. They've all tried to find this bridge, you know, to Islam and to Islamic countries and some sort of sanity. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think they thought they found it when they happened upon Imam Rolf. They thought they had this, you know, they thought they had this guy that was going to be the, you know, the answer to the chasm between both camps and all that. But, you know, I guess I'm just tired of, you know, this constant projection from the West of trying to westernize, you know, the whole perception of Islam and the Islamists and so forth. I mean, we see it in these Egyptian, you know, these protests and demonstrations across the Islamic world right now. I mean, you'd think these guys were like Patrick Henry, you know.
Well, let me ask
turban.
You some, Holger.
Huh?
Holger, let me ask you some. Did you hear the speech that was given by the British Prime Minister, David Cameron, about multiculturalism? He gave last week.
I read pieces of it. I also saw what Sarkozy had to say, and of course I saw what Merkel said a while back too.
Well, I'll tell you what. If David Cameron doesn't abandon that speech that he gave in Germany, that was a very profound speech. And if he recognizes the fact that multiculturalism is what is killing our society, and the fact that Islamists do not like to assimilate into societies, then I think that that's something that should resonate, that speech, around the world, and it should be repeated in America. Although, you know, Sheikh Obama is not going to repeat it, but it's something that somebody should bring up and actually run with. That speech was excellent. I mean, the 2-minute clip of him talking about multiculturalism destroying the Western societies, and the fact that when these people come to our respective countries, they refuse to assimilate into our society, they refuse to accept our laws, that basically they should leave. And you know what? That's damn right. They should leave.
Well, I don't know if you – did you see – this is – I think this was about 2 months ago. Did you see where the Belgians were actually paying – they were actually compensating Muslims to leave and go back to the Balkans? I mean, literally
really?
Cutting them checks to go back to the Balkan area, you know, where they came from. And that was kind of an interesting way to get rid of them.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, you know, hey, if it can cost you more to keep them there, probably. But yeah, no, I think that's you know, you got to wonder. You've heard the British Prime Minister talk about the failure of multiculturalism. You've heard the German Merkel say the same thing. Sarkozy's the last one to say it. You know, is anybody in America listening? I mean, literally, did anybody pay attention to that?
Mm-hmm.
You know? So.
Well, part of what Cameron said, Holger, is pretty interesting, that all around the Western world, not just the masses, but the leadership is beginning to realize that multiculturalism, even if begun with sincere and benign motivations, has become an abject fiasco. It has resulted in more division, not less. It has resulted in more tensions, not less. It has resulted in more hatred and distrust, not less. It is time that all of our leaders and politicians wake up to these truths and do some long, hard thinking about the future. We had a good half century now of one set of policies which clearly are not cutting it. Thus, it is clearly time for change. It is not already too late.
Yep, already too late.
Yeah, he said our government's most fundamental duty is not to keep a community divided into tribes, but to defend the shared values that are our only hope of making a one out of many. So how about a little more loving for the things that unite us, whether it's our history, symbols, institutions, or traditional values? That is not too much to ask of your citizenry at all, period.
Well, you know, I think the, you know, and there's a little bit of banter going on in the chat room here about the assimilation, you know, the Muslim assimilating to America or to Europe or wherever and all that kind of good stuff. And I did an article or a post a long time ago where I talked about how, you know, when the immigrants way back in, you know, the Ellis Island days when they came to America – you know, you saw those pictures and you saw these, you know, if you ever noticed these people, they were, none of them were smiling. They were absolutely just like, you know, stone-faced. And I made the observation that they were like that because they were scared, because they were so nervous about getting turned away. That's how badly they wanted to be here. I mean, they had, obviously had made this long, huge trek to come to America and so forth. And I mean, these people absolutely put everything on the line just to get into this country. And I mean, we've got obviously we've got Muslims coming to America. We got Muslims, immigrating to Europe who, not only do they really care whether or not they get accepted or not, but as soon as they set foot on the soil, it's like my way or the highway.
Right.
So, I mean, it's a whole, I don't even see this as an immigration. I mean, I don't think what Britain did to their people was not an immigration. This was like an invasion.
Well, you talk about Ellis Island. I have to tell you, my grandfather came over in Ellis Island in 1898, and both of my grandfathers did, and both of my grandmothers did. But he came from Sicily, and in the household growing up, my father was born in America, and so was his six and seven brothers and sisters. While they learned Italian and they spoke Italian, my grandfather made sure that each one of his sons and daughters spoke English, and that my grandfather even taught himself English to make sure that everybody got educated and that he can converse with his fellow people. But yeah, the Italians stuck together, the Irish stuck together, the Jewish stuck together, the Polish stuck together. But the one thing they had in common, they were in America and they considered themselves Americans. And World War II is a great example. My grandmother had six stars in the windows. Six stars. Six of my uncles were in the military service.
Wow.
In World War II.
Wow.
So they saw what they could have easily said, hell with that, I'm not going to enlist. I mean, you're fighting against Italy. But they understood the tyranny, and that was probably by my grandfather's education, they understood the tyranny that of a Germany. And as we talked about in the first part of the show, my father was always of the opinion that had they not fought and won World War II, we would be speaking German today.
Yeah. Absolutely. Okay, fellas. Well, thanks for letting me call in. Great show so far.
Great call, Holger. Thank you.
Okay. See you guys.
Thanks, Holger.
Yep.
So, hey, Doc. What do you think of all this? What's your thoughts?
Well, I agree with y'all. I don't have any counterpoint to anybody. Holger made a good point with them being so scared when they came over. That's why a lot of them did change their name, just like my family did when they came over from Italy. They dropped the D-I, or the D-E, if it will, off the name to assimilate even more, if you will. I guess that was part of the fear that a lot of people changed their name. My wife's family, they're all 100% Irish. They all came from Ireland, and they as well changed their name when they came here. It's a similar spelling, I guess more Americanized of a spelling of their last name, but that was a common practice as well at that time, was to change the name to, I guess, better fit in or to better assimilate, I guess would be a better way of saying it.
Hey, Doc, speaking of assimilation, who do we have in the chat room this evening?
We're joined by a whole bunch of our regulars today. I'm very grateful that they are here. We welcome the guests as well. Iggy Mom has joined us.
Mommy.
Yeah, Gary, we already heard he's in here. The new hours are actually 6 to 8. We're going to have to update that. His show will be 6 to 8. Yes, on Wednesday. Holger was just joined us on the phone. Measure of Faith, Minnesota Girl, Reese Cup, one of my favorite people, Salty Heart, and Thundercracker. And to all those who are just listening to Radio Jihad and weren't able to join us in the chat room or listening in the archive, we appreciate you as well.
Thanks, Doc.
You're welcome. I posted a couple of links earlier. I don't know if you guys had caught them, but they were occurrences that have happened just basically since we've been on air.
Really? Why don't you enlighten us? What are the posts?
I'll post them for you as well. UK Europe discusses freezing Egyptian assets. That came over to Wire just 2 hours ago. They're talking about with the new people coming in power, and they're also speaking about bringing charges against the several ex-officers from Egypt, I guess, as the new leadership comes in. And then shortly after that one, just about an hour and a half ago, Egypt echoes across region, Iran, Bahrain, and Yemen. Dubai, United Arab Emirates, the possible heirs of Egypt's uprising took to the streets Monday in different corners of the Middle East. Iran's belligerent opposition stormed back to central Tehran and came under a tear gas attack by police. I'll repost both of those links for you guys because, you know, I can't read these people's names. We were talking about that earlier in the chat, too. How come they just can't have names like, you know, Jones, Smith, you know, something that we can read?
Mohammed Jones, Mohammed Smith. Well, you know, but the funny thing is the lack of assimilation, and if that's going to start getting some groundswell support, I mean, if David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, has opened up or awakened the sleeping giants around the world by his multiculturalism speech, I think that it's time that we run with that. You know, people can understand. People around the world in the Western democracies can understand the issue of not assimilating, and they're starting to understand what the word assimilate means. And you know, these people like Nidal Hassan, who was a major in the United States Army, who terrorized Fort Hood and we killed 13 of his fellow soldiers and wounded over 30. He was supposed to be the poster boy for moderate Islam. What happened to his assimilation? Taxpayers paid for him to get a medical degree. Taxpayers funded his time that he was in the United States Army. And to this day, because that bastard hasn't been convicted, he's still receiving his $6,000 plus a month from the United States Army. You know, that's really kind of sick.
Yeah, it is sick, but the beautiful part, which we don't hear too much about, he may be collecting a check but has no way of cashing them.
That is correct.
As of the last I heard, there still is not a single bank anywhere in the area that will allow him to open up the account in order to cash the checks. So kudos to the American banking system in that aspect.
And that's America for you, right? That's what the freedom of choice is. You have the freedom to say, I don't want your money. I don't want the blood that's on your money. And you know what? America is free to do that. And that's what's cool about America.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's people are starting to wake up, but unfortunately in the process of waking up and realizing exactly what's going on, they have to be real careful. I just want to warn people, please, please, please do not believe everything you come across on the internet. There are a lot of people out there giving out false hopes, misinformation. They're misleading you down the wrong path. The only thing they're going to end up doing is getting you put in jail or taking all your money you got in the bank. You know, so please be very careful, whoever you, you know, get involved with and as your process to wake up and wanting to learn the truth and wanting to know about the freedom in our history here in America and how it was founded. Just be very careful. That's all I have to say about that because there are a lot of people here that are going to take advantage of you.
That Nigerian facts that I got, that facts about the Nigerian prince who's got a $72 million fortune, and if I send $1,600, I'm entitled to 10% of it? Is
yeah,
that
exactly.
Oh, well, damn it.
I'll tell you what, I got a better deal for you. Instead of sending it to him, just send a tenth of that to me, and I'll invest it for you.
Great. Great. Let me stop that check. Hold on.
Well, what I do when I get those, just to have fun, I send back an email to the guy, and I say, well, what you need to do is send me just $500 so I can open up the account for you. And then as soon as you do that, then we can go ahead and do business. And I never hear from them again.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can. I've actually hadn't had one in years. I opted out of all that crazy stuff a long, long time ago. But my wife there, she still works in the bank, and they see that kind of stuff on a regular basis. You won the foreign lottery, and they got these all kinds of, you know, official looking lottery checks, and people come into the bank all the time trying to cash these things out. My wife just shakes her head. You know, it's like, well, put it this way: did you actually enter a drawing for a lottery in another country? Well, no. Well, there you go. Just, I mean, really, it's terrible. These people hit up these for sale sites. We have almost every community has them. You know, your local newspaper, you know, classifieds, if you will. And you'll often, you put an ad in there, and the next thing you know, and they got warnings on the site, you know, but people don't read warnings, you know. People are involved in their own world, I guess, and too lazy to read. But they'll sit there and they'll say you're selling a product and you're selling it for $100. Well, what they'll do is they'll say, okay, I'll buy it, you know, consider it sold, and I'm going to send you a check for $500, so, you know, to cover the shipping and all, because you got to send it to me in this other country. You know, they all kinds of crazy scams like that are out there.
So is that what you got your wife for Valentine's Day?
Absolutely.
She must love you.
Oh, damn it, Valentine's Day. Shit. I forgot about that. I got to go to the store on the way home. Damn it.
Yeah, you don't stop at the store, you'll be sleeping in the doghouse tonight.
Yeah. Be knocking on Al's door.
I don't know. As a guy, Valentine's Day has got to be one of my least favorite holidays because we're forced to do things.
I sent you a card
things.
Last year. Yeah, we're forced.
No comment.
Yeah. I mean, what's the deal? I think Hallmark invented Valentine's Day to sell more cards, and it became a whole marketing thing.
Actually, what happened was, and this is why I don't like celebrating it, to be honest with you, the real truth behind it is there was a woman many, many years ago, and she wanted to honor her grandmother who did something very miraculous. I can't remember the whole story. And she went and...
She won a Nigerian lottery?
No. She sent an appeal to Congress or whatever to if they would find a day to honor her grandmother. Well, or a plaque or something. I don't know. She wanted something just to honor her grandmother. And instead of it just becoming this one thing, they adopted it as this whole Valentine commercialized issue, you know, to get your money and to write cards and everything else. But it really did have a valid reason for coming about, if you will, in the beginning. It just turned like everything else, like Christmas and every damn thing else that we put our hands on in this country just turns into commercialism.
Now, for our guy listeners, I'm going to give you some advice. We're going to go a little bit off topic here for a second. But wait about 45 to 60 days, and then what you do is you get some flowers and a bottle of wine, and you give it to your wife unexpectedly or girlfriend or whatever.
Or both.
Or both. Say, honey, look what I brought home.
Just don't get the names mixed up, but go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
And you surprise them, and I tell you, that is good stuff. For the women who are listening, this is a guy secret, and you call in if you think that this is a good plan. And I tell you, the benefits, miraculous. Just do it when they least expect it, and it's a winner every time.
Okay, I'll have to write that. I'm writing that down as we speak. All right,
that's good. That's what I'm telling the judge at divorce court in 3 weeks.
Is there any lawyers in the chat room? Sorry, Minnesota girl and Reese and Salty, I apologize. And Iggy. Well, I got to tell you something. I saw this morning, but I didn't see the name of the city. Fox and Friends this morning was making this announcement, and Holger put it on an update. The recommendation of its Tuesday, the recommendation of its Peace and Justice Commission The Berkeley City Council is set to vote on a resolution to invite one or two cleared Guantanamo Bay detainees to resettle in Berkeley. Now, if we had any doubt in our minds how ass backwards California is, this really takes the cake. This is absolutely retarded. I'm not getting it. I mean, are you kidding me? Berkeley now is going to get involved with the Guantanamo detainees, quote unquote. Maybe we can make him mayor of Berkeley. Oh, you know what? We'll put him in charge of the 4th of July fireworks, because obviously they can make great bombs. Come on, Owen. This is absolutely incredible. What is wrong with these liberal bastions that are in the United States? What is wrong with them? I mean, do they not see what America stands for? Do they not understand that Islam is not in America to assimilate or to be part of our culture? I mean, are they that myopic that they can't understand what Islam has in store for us? This explanatory memo that was written in 1987 and uncovered during an FBI raid in 2004 says a million things. It's a small memo. What is it that people are not understanding about this? Is it going to take another attack, another 9/11 type attack on American soil?
According to Obama, we can absorb another attack.
Yeah, that's true. Yep. We can hardly absorb that man. I mean, what Sheikh Obama has done to this country and what he's continually doing is an outright disgrace. And you know what? It's time that people start questioning this man's patriotism, because he has none. And for Time magazine to compare this son of a gun to Ronald Reagan is an absolute disgrace. I mean, you have a free market, a free enterprise, capitalistic individual in Ronald Reagan, and you have a communist. There's a lot of similarities there. I mean, they're black and white, no pun intended. My God.
You can't even say that anymore.
Yeah, and then you know what? You can't even say don't fire until you see the whites in their eyes. I mean, that's considered racism. I mean, God. I don't know. I'm just... Oh, my God. Every day there's something else that really comes into play here. And, you know, it's becoming more and more absurd. For 18 days, we're going to sit by as we watch the Western media sanitize and legitimize the Muslim Brotherhood. For 18 days, we had to listen to that. Then we heard conflicting reports out of the Obama administration concerning the Muslim Brotherhood. And then we hear yesterday, or at CPAC this weekend, Sahail Khan, who's supposed to be a conservative Republican, talking about how the Muslim Brotherhood does not exist in America. What the hell is going on? We, ladies and gentlemen, we have no ties to Frank Gaffney. I can't speak for Al, but I can tell you, and Doc, you probably can agree with this, you probably are in the same boat, I have never met the man. I have never spoken to Frank Gaffney. When you read absurd statements that are made by so-called intelligent individuals, such as this Sahail Khan, when he says that he declares that there is no Muslim Brotherhood in the United States, and then for 18 days we're subjected to the Western media legitimizing the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, where they have been banned for the last at least 30 years, where Hassan al-Banna was, if I'm not mistaken, was put to death by the Egyptian government, where his predecessor, Saeed Qutb, who the Council on American Islamic Relations loves to quote in their membership drives, in their membership drive brochures, who's the predecessor of Hassan al-Banna from the Muslim Brotherhood, Saeed Qutob. He was put to death in the mid-60s by the Egyptian government under Nasser. And we are now told that the Muslim Brotherhood must come to the table. We must allow them to come to the political table. Oh, my God. I'm thinking, all this work we've done, Al, for 3 years, and there are still people inside of our own government who are still trying to portray these terrorist organizations as accepting organizations, as valid, as legitimate organizations. They sanitize what these people stand for.
Well, a great example of that. That is a fantastic point, Vito. And history does repeat itself, because you take Iran back in the late 70s when Jimmy Carter did not stand with the Shah, much like what happened in Egypt with Hosni Mubarak. The liberals at the time, I went back and looked at some old press clippings from back then. The liberals and the liberal media were calling the mullahs that they were going to be bringing peace and democracy to Iran and that they were moderates. And look what happened, the exact opposite. And I'm afraid the same thing is going to be happening in Egypt as well. It's like history is repeating itself. The news and all the talking heads, the liberal talking heads, are saying the same darn thing again.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
And that is a coincidence, Mr. Obama, thank you, President Obama, is that you and Jimmy Carter, in fact, that Time magazine should have had President Obama and President Jimmy Carter together and with a big heart,
exactly.
With a love heart. He's got no place being anywhere near Reagan.
Al, it is going to happen in Egypt, and you and I both know why it's going to happen in Egypt. Even though the military has suspended the Egyptian constitution, and if they're going to bring back these factions to the table, these opposition parties to the table, you're going to have the Egyptian military is going to have a seat, and now the world is asking for the Muslim Brotherhood to come to the table. What exactly are you going to have in a constitution in a Muslim country? You're going to have a Sharia law-based constitution, which Egypt was based on before it was suspended. So
correct.
Now if you add the Egyptian constitution now being based on Sharia law, one, you will not have democracy. Two, you now have allowed terrorists to dictate what your country is supposed to be like, i.e. the Muslim Brotherhood. So where is this democratic organization? Where is the freedom and the individual liberties that the Western media is ranting and raving about the people of Egypt are bringing forth? It's not going to exist. It's all a ruse, man. It's all a ruse. And they're playing the world. As John Bolton says, the media is lapping up the Muslim Brotherhood, and they're anything but democratic.
Mm-hmm. Well, I read an article that makes perfect sense out of that. It's nothing but a cultural miscommunication, because freedom and democracy in under Sharia compliance or Islamic form of government means the freedom to choose Sharia and the freedom to choose your Islam. In fact, freedom and democracy as we know it does not exist in the Middle East, because they view it as something totally different, where we think of freedom and democracy as the individual rights, the individual to pursue life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. There is no such thing, because you must follow the dictates of the Quran, the life of Muhammad, and that is your life from cradle to grave. If you deviate from that, it becomes legal issue that could land you in jail if you do not do that. So the two are completely incompatible, as we've said on this show numerous times.
Amen. 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 So if we get it, if radio jihadists get it, what does the media reporting? It's not just a simple omission. This is an error and omission. This is a flagrant foul. This is a flagrant omission. This is something that is just it's plain idiotic. It's insanity.
It's willful blindness is what it is. And going back to Reagan for a second, back when
You know, you remember Obama had restarted the START talks. In fact, they were signed, the new START talks were signed basically in the dark, because I don't remember reading a whole lot about it. And Obama, President Obama, was lobbying heavily for a new START treaty. Yeah, because he was trying to limit nuclear weapons, thinking that if you limit nuclear weapons, that the world won't blow itself up. So back in Reagan's day, when SALT actually was started with the SALT treaties, this liberal reporter from the New York Times goes to Ronald Reagan, President Reagan, and goes, Reagan, Mr. Reagan, what do you think about the new SALT treaty, the SALT treaty, and is it good or bad? Reagan comes back and says, too much salt is bad for you. And that was his answer. On to the next question.
Yeah, but you know, we all know what happens with Sheikh Obama. You know, Sheikh Obama thinks that that's probably a tad too.
Getting way too complicated for me.
Yeah, yeah. When you have to have a capitalistic free enterprise, a free market ideology, when you have to express the freedom and individual liberties. Sheikh Obama can't express that because he grew up in a communist forum. He grew up his mentors were communists. Frank Marshall Davis was a communist. He doesn't believe in free thinking. The Islamic teachings that he learned as a child is a totalitarian ideology. He does not understand what it means to be free. He is experiencing the freedoms, but you can see by his own policies the last 24 months how he wants to indenture people to the federal government. So,
right.
You know, he's a bit intolerant himself.
Oh, without a doubt. But think of the marketing power of that image on Time magazine of Reagan and President Obama together with a big heart symbol. That is President Obama's – that's part of his reelection. And that's part of – he's starting his reelection campaign right now because the image is more powerful than the truth. In fact, the image is a lie, but the fact that Time put it up there gives it legitimacy, and Saul Alinsky would be proud of that because that is a typical Saul Alinsky move.
Well, you know what? Let me ask you this, Al. You know, a lot's being said in the media about Obama trying to redefine himself, and I'll tell you something. With Rahm Emanuel leaving, the smartest thing that Obama did, and this is all by design, is he brought in Daley. And have you noticed, since Daley has taken over as chief of staff, you see the way they're remarketing and reprioritizing Obama? Suddenly he's the centrist. Suddenly he's the center. Suddenly he's in the middle. You have to look at Daley. This is all being crafted by the Chicago machine to really dupe the American people. And let's hope. But you know what? I don't think that the Republicans have it in them to make this challenge, because they've not made that challenge yet since Daley's come in office, how Obama has redefined himself. You know, you got the willing accomplices of Time Media putting in that image of Reagan and Obama. But now who is the new communications director for Obama? Wasn't he a Time magazine writer? Let's start. The tentacles don't go very far.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, the guy that he was Biden's press secretary, I think, and now the new press secretary taking over for that idiot that just left, he was formerly of Time magazine. So, you know, all this stuff that's being crafted is not done by accident. It's all done by a clear way to paint Obama as a Obama as a middle of the road guy. Give me a break. That man hasn't seen the middle of a road since he hit a deer in Illinois. I mean, give me a break. Thank you, Reese. Thank you. I got this. You know, you talk about centrist and Obama, it really chokes you up, you know? God. Yeah, the Republicans are missing a unique opportunity to really put the onus back on Obama to start defining himself in his own words, let him start saying that he's a centrist. No, I mean, he's got more taxes that are involved on small business. Now he wants small business to pay for the unemployment taxes because, they can't afford it, so he wants to assess businesses another 6.3% around the United States. Oh, and then he has the audacity to tell business that you need to start hiring and spend some of that cash. You know what, Obama? Up yours. I'm not going to spend any of my cash. I'm not going to hire any new employees. And as long as you're president of the United States and the policies that you're putting forth, you have given me no incentive as a business owner to hire new people. You've given me no incentive to expand my business. And now you look at the additional taxes that you're putting forth onto the small business people, the 1099 tax. You know, I'm sorry, it's not a tax. We now must issue 1099s to all vendors that we spend $600 or more on. Really? So who's going to get rich on that? The CPAs.
Yeah, I mean, that means buying supplies for your office at Staples or Office Depot. All of a sudden, now they become a vendor. And doing 1099s, when you've got 20, 30 of them, it's a pain. It is a time-consuming process. Or you pay your accountant $15 to $20 per 1099 to do it for you.
Exactly. Now, where is our disposable income? Well, I'm supposed to sit here and start spending my money to hire people when, in fact, my sales are down, but I've got some cash that's stowed in case of a rainy day, but now I know I'm going to be faced with an increased CPA tax because I'm going to have to spend more money for him to do my taxes because of the convoluted laws that are inside the health care bill that have no bearing on being in the health care bill. Now I'm told that there's a 6.3% tax on business to offset the cost of the unemployment compensation because more and more people – well, wait a minute. I thought we had a 9% unemployment rate in the United States. I thought it went down. It dropped 0.4%. So are you lying to us there? And then we have a health care bill that we have no idea what the costs are going to be, other than if you don't comply with the federal government, there's going to be a $2,000 per employee penalty. And then the federal government is going to tell me if my health care plan is considered a, quote, Cadillac plan, whereby I'm going to be taxed even more because I have a Cadillac plan. And yet now we have 732 businesses and unions across the United States who have been exempted from having to participate in Obamacare. Well, you know, that's really great. If I grease the palms of Obama's campaign, I, as a union, the SEIU union, the AFL-CIO, we can request an opt-out provision. And guess what? The pool gets smaller and smaller. Thereby, we're back to the same problem. Who's going to offset the costs? You already cut $500 billion from the Medicare program. Well, now let's kill off more old people. Well, shit, if you're 70 years old and you need to have a new ticker, screw you. You lived a good life, and you know what? We can stop paying your Social Security. That means it goes back into the pool. What an asshole. Excuse the French, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, this guy is a real gem. You know,
yeah,
how much more of this communist crap do we have to take? Go ahead.
As much as they hand out, and what you're going to have to do if you have a Cadillac plan and you're going to face that penalty or fine, you're going to say, well, screw that. Screw my employees. I'm canceling the plan. You send a note to your employees. Y'all can now all get on the government plan. Have fun. Thank you very much.
Exactly. And you know what? AT&T and Tyco Industries have been doing the calculations, and they're better off doing that to their employees. And if
right.
AT&T can do it to their employees and Tyco Industries can do it to their employees, what other large corporations in America can do that to their employees?
Well, think what's it going to do to the insurance company? Now you've got the government competing in the market against for the insurer pool for their income producers, which each customer is, and now all the customers are going to be forced by government edict to go to the government insurance.
Exactly.
I pledge allegiance.
You are exactly right.
United States of America.
Well, ladies and gentlemen,
the
show is coming to an end. We'll be back again tomorrow evening from 6 p.m. to 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. I want to thank you all, everybody in the chat room. Thank you for listening. Doc, thanks a lot. Hope we'll see you tomorrow. We'll talk to you again tomorrow afternoon or tomorrow evening, wherever your Eastern Standard Time is. Al, good show, man. Ladies
Likewise.
And gentlemen, thank you for listening to this evening. Join Al, me, and Doc tomorrow from 6 p.m. to 7:30. Go to our website, www.radiojihad.org. For Alan Kay, for Doc Mule, I'm Vito Esposito. Thank you for listening. God bless our troops, and God bless America. Radio Jihad, striving to educate America.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Oh, down to the last second.
Hoo-ah.
Getting
Whoa.
Better and better at that.
You are the consummate professional.
A constipated professional. Thank you. I like that. Yeah.
Oh,
man. I'll tell you. I know we get off on the Islamic subject, but you know all this stuff's getting tied in, and this healthcare bill is still sitting in my craw, as it is yours.
Well, let's talk about that tomorrow. That's a good topic.
Oh,
there's a lot of. A lot of court issues going on right now. Trying to get rid of it.
A lot of what issues? Court?
A lot of individual court issues going on to try to get rid of it. A lot of the states have banded together to say, not in my state.
Right, including Florida.
Yep.
Florida led the way.
Yeah, now isn't it right, Vito, that now that Bondi has officially... is challenging it, that that it can't go into effect... Or can parts of it still go into effect while it's being challenged by the states, this health care
right,
bill?
Right now it can't. Right now it's going to have to be, if I'm not mistaken, the judge ruled pretty heavily on this. I mean, he like dissected this bill and not only ruled on the initial lawsuit, but ruled on like 37 parts of it or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he summarily knocked down each and every piece of this legislation. So the way it stands right now, it goes to the Supreme Court. I mean, they're going to look to bypass the They're going to bypass the appellate court system to go to directly to the Supreme Court.
The way it stands now.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Where how it stands now? What?
Well, how it stands now is it's dead because you got 23 other states that have also committed to Florida or have stood behind Florida, including the National Federation of Independent Business, which actually was on the correct side of this thing. So.
What about the other 34? What about the other 34 states?
Well, you got Virginia that stood up on its own, and Virginia was the first one to have the Virginia courts, rule on this and consider it unconstitutional. Not only that, the Attorney General for the state of Virginia, he did something that was absolutely like fantastic, which got absolutely no press whatsoever, and that was. If you remember, during the 2009 debates, the Obama administration Obama was out there on the stump and his minions, Pelosi and Reid, saying that the Republicans are scaring you, that this is not a tax. They're trying to say that this is a tax on you, the American people, and that is not true. And they were emphatic about that, and they were actually taking the Republicans and just driving them into the ground and saying they've lied to you. Well... When the Obama administration tried to defend this in the Virginia courts, the Attorney General for the state of Virginia got the Obama administration to admit because the Obama administration could not justify the decision of it of the what is it. Oh crap! Goes across state lines, and so they could not validate their argument. So they said, "Well, this is a tax," and so the Attorney General for Virginia got the Obama administration to admit that the health care bill should go through because it was a tax. It was not an issue of it crossing state lines and people being forced to buy it, but it amounted to nothing more than a tax on the American people. And it's like the Attorney General for the state of Virginia was like dumbfounded, because that's what he was trying to get them to say, and they had to admit it to the judge that it in fact was the Obamacare program is a tax on the American people. And then on the other side, you go down to Pensacola and Florida and 23 other states now win that particular case. And not only that, the judge expands his decision to like 37 other points that they didn't even ask for, ruining the Obamacare being unconstitutional. So it's getting like double and triple whammies. And the Obama administration, because there's no teleprompters, they can't keep their story straight. You know, it's a tax in Virginia. And it crosses, you're allowed to cross state lines, and it's not an imposition on the states, and it's not an imposition on the people. It's great. It's freaking great.
And plus, didn't the Democrats, they took out one of the components of the bill to where you could separate out, you could do it incrementally, and they took that part out of it. There's a word for it, but I can't think of it right now.
Yeah, and that's just it, Al. There's a couple of things that I can't think of either, how it's defined. And Doc, you keep up with the Constitution. What was it called? That was what clause was it they were talking about? The Commerce Clause. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The Commerce Clause.
Well, the individual mandate provision.
Yes.
Yeah, and it comes down to commerce. And if this is why this is so important, guys. You don't understand. It's not just a matter of the so-called 2-million-page health care bill. If this can get passed, okay, if this can get passed, it opens up a whole nother floodgate. Because now what's stopping them from saying, okay, you have to buy a Sony television, Charmin
exactly.
toilet paper. You know, it's all going to come down to... It's all going to come down to they could, if they get away with this, that's going to open the floodgates by just allowing them to do anything they want, you know, to better their lobbyist interest, if you will, where they can force
exactly.
you to buy something, especially a car. Okay, they're all hooked on global warming. Well, guess what? They can tell you, you know, if this passes, they can sit there and say everybody this year has to go out and buy such and such a vehicle. You're no longer to drive
for
other vehicles on the road. Yeah.
Why was you brought up the cars and I didn't mean to interrupt you. Why do you think the Bolt was the car of the year, huh? Why was Bolt the car of the year this year? You got to be kidding me! A $50,000 piece of crap that you got to plug in that we're gonna have to pay more for electricity because Obama has the cap and tax program, and we won't be able to afford not only the gas but the electricity to put into the Bolt. And now the Bolt is the car of the year. You just said it. If the health care bill passes, they could force you to buy what they want you to buy, including a Chevy Bolt or some sort of car with those type of emissions to it.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's we live in a communist country. You know, people don't want to hear that, but all 10 planks of the Communist Manifesto are alive and well in America. People, wake up.
11 planks, the 11th plank, and that's Jake Obama in the White House.
Well, there you go. So, you know, welcome to the new communistic party, people.
Oh, my God.
We've been living in a democracy, and you hear them tell you this every day on the news, and people just are blind. They keep saying, oh, Republic, and yet all day long you hear on C-SPAN and anytime you hear these politicians talking, the democracy is alive and well. Yeah, because that's exactly what we live in. We live in a democracy. We haven't been under the House of the Republic, if you will, since the enactment of the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. That
Woodrow
put us into a democracy.
Not since Woodrow Wilson.
Yep. But people don't want to hear that. You know, they're blind to it, or they're just accepted of, you know, the subject to. And that's a very big problem with me and other organizations that I belong with. And it's crazy. You know, it saddens me that the people defend the tyranny. And that's weird. You know, it's like you can show them in black and white. Here's where it's wrong. Here's what's going on. Here's what they're doing to you. You know, we had the health care bill. We have all these other things that they've done to us, you know, which everybody, the general public would agree that is unconstitutional. You know, is this a government for the people, by the people? Hell no. I mean, 85% of the population said, no, we don't want this. They passed it anyway. Hello.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mob rule. It's a majority rule. And if that was the case, then the 85% should have been able to shut them down. But you don't have no say. It's nothing but smoke and mirrors and a puppet show. You literally have no say what goes on in this government. None whatsoever.
Yep. And
go
Judge
read.
Vince,
go read. Oh, go ahead, Al.
I was just going to say that Judge Vinson from Pensacola, who you mentioned earlier, found that there was no need for an injunction since the declaratory judgment that the entire law was invalid was sufficient. So, in effect, there's nothing left to enjoin since no part of the law survived. By contrast, the ruling in Virginia invalidated the mandate of where individuals must purchase the government insurance. The judge severed the mandate from the rest of the law but denied an injunction preventing the rest of the law from taking effect. So the Judge Vinson's decision is far more sweeping than the Virginia case and presents a greater problem for the Obama administration, which arguably does not have authority to implement any aspect of Obamacare.
Well, you know, the Virginia case, in my opinion, and I'm not a lawyer, but the Virginia case actually set the tone for the other states, an easy tone for the other states to fight this law, to fight
right.
Obamacare. When the Attorney General for Virginia got the Obama administration to admit that this was nothing more than a tax, it really set the tone to fight the Commerce Clause. And now the Obama administration took a calculated stab at trying to defeat this. Their only way to defeat this now is going to be in the Supreme Court. And, you know, there's one bastard in the Supreme Court who is relishing this. He's reveling in the fact that he's going to be or can be either the spoiler or the man of the hour, and that's Arthur Kennedy, Justice Kennedy. Mm-hmm. Justice Kennedy is the guy that is so enamored with himself that depending on which way the political wind is blowing, he will decide with. And I tell you, that man is probably the worst man of conviction than at least the liberals in there have a conviction of one way or another. Kennedy does not. He's being professed as this thinker, but he's done more harm than good, in my opinion, since he's been in a Supreme Court justice.
And if memory serves, he was a Bush appointment.
Yes, he was. Well, so was Souter. And Souter turned out to be a horrible individual.
Yep. And that's part of what led to the Tea Party.
I hope they don't go to the Supreme Court.
It's got nowhere to go now. It can't. The appellate courts now are. There's no use for the Obama administration, the Justice Department, to go to the appellate courts. So now, right now, Doc, there's nowhere for it to go except the Supreme Court.
Right. And if it does, guess what's going to happen?
Just hope nobody dies of the that are right leaning right now. And I'll
tell
you what, I'd get a couple.
It won't matter. I guarantee you, there's what 9 total. I guarantee you, the vote is going to be a 5-4. And it's going to be voted as constitutional, and they're going to do it. I guarantee it. If it goes to the Supreme Court, okay, you got to look at the history of each of the individual judges. You got to go a little bit deeper. They're all corporate bigwigs. They're all from Monsanto. They're all ex-board members of Monsanto. They're all part of the whole Bush, Monsanto, the elitist. It doesn't matter what you do.
I'll take some of that action.
What they want.
I think you're wrong. I'll take some of that action.
Okay.
$10 bet, 2-1 odds.
No problem.
All right. Done.
All right.
Because they just passed. They just had a decision last week or the week before, and the decision came down 5-4 on something that everybody should have been across the board sweep as unconstitutional. Should have never even made it as far as it made it. When the final vote came in, it was a 5-4 split. You know why? Because it furthered the patent, it furthered the patent lawsuits for Monsanto. And Monsanto, alleged four other companies, owns our entire food production in the U.S. They are going to starve us out.
Doc, which part was Kennedy? Where is Kennedy's vote on this?
I'd have to look it up to tell you exactly where his is. He could have been one of the four. You know what I'm saying? They have that ability.
He was one of the five.
To play the number, you know what I mean? To either be part of the five or part of the four. But the bottom line is 5-4 in favor of. Because they sat there and they made the ruling came down way back in 1940s, I think it was, or 1938 it's actually to be. More specific, where the, you know, you ask people, well, who has the right to claim something constitutional or unconstitutional? That lies in the hands of who? The Supreme Court. They have the power, no matter what, to decide if something is constitutional or not. So, again, they're actually not voting under a constitutional basis. They're voting for their best interest. Who's going to grease their pocket the most? That's what it comes down to. That's why they're appointed and not elected.
Man,
you
are one
elected,
cynical.
That's a different
you
story.
Are one,
they're appointed.
You are one cynical man, Doc Miola.
Yes, sir, I am.
I was cynical. I'm just cynical about Justice Kennedy. That's the only one I'm a cynic on. I think he's a whore in the Supreme Court. But the other ones, you know, you already know where, the dike's going to go, and you know where the I shouldn't get that.
What's Hillary going to do?
Sotomayor. Sotomayor, you know what's going to happen with the two Obama appointees. You know exactly where they're going to vote.
Yep.
And it's going to boil down to Justice Kennedy. And everybody's going to be holding their breath while Kennedy sits on his throne and he's reveling in all the media and this big gasp. And then this expert thinker, this great thinker. In the meantime, you want a great thinker? Just look at what Scalia says. You want to know what our founding fathers had in store? Just read Scalia's writing, you freaking moron.
Well, shoot, look at gun control. On that went to the Supreme Court and it was 5-4.
Yep.
To uphold the Second Amendment.
Yeah,
so,
why
yeah,
was it that
I,
close?
Hmm?
Why was it that close?
It shouldn't have been that close.
That's my
what's
point.
Scary. Yeah,
and
I agree with you 100%.
If you look at almost all the votes over the last, well, say 20 years, unless it's really something off the wall, it's always been a one-vote decision.
Yeah, that's another reason we got to get President Obama not elected at the next coup. I mean, the next election.
Absolutely. There you go. Yep, and that's, you know, it's sad. I mean, you got that many people that are supposed to have the so-called blind judgment, if you will, and are supposed to pass a decision based on constitutionality. Well, are they reading the same constitution? Because if you got nine people reading the exact same law, how can they come up with a different vote? It should be an unanimous vote every single time across the board. But it never is.
You know,
why? Because they're voting their personal interest.
Yeah,
it's a vote for personal interest, which means there is no republic. There is no freedom. You know, there's only one path to freedom, and I have the answer. But nobody wants to listen. Yeah, exactly.
Boy, what a beautiful night tonight is, isn't it?
Oh, it's gorgeous. I love
60
it.
Degrees, and it's gorgeous.
I think Sharia courts are the answer.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what. You know what? Okay. All right, take it from the one who is so cynical against our own government as it is. But think about it. At least their stuff is written in stone as far as their belief goes. You commit this crime, this is the offense. End of statement. There is no voting. There is no, let's go vote. Oh, let's go have a bunch of Supreme Courts. Oh, it's 5-4. You don't have any of that crap. Here's your crime. Here's your punishment. Have a nice day. You know what I mean? It really is that simple. So in a lot lot of ways, I guess that's really not a bad choice, you know?
I think the three of us should sit up there and we should make an opinion. If we don't like it, if we don't like what they say, gun control, yes.
Yes, Conrad.
Obamacare, no. And
exactly.
Next.
Vito, a benevolent dictator. I like it.
That's right. That's right. Oh, please don't even. Oh, man, you mentioned a bad word there. Oh, that's the other thing that scares me right now.
What, Vito?
No.
Dick?
Oh.
Vader?
Yeah, Dick. Dick scares me big time right now. He always claimed from the beginning he was a one-term president. Well, now they're setting him up to run again. With Muslims he's already pointed into power, okay?
Oh.
If he does not get elected, okay, I would not be surprised if they try to give him the same advice they tried to do with, I think it was Eisenhower, where they said, just declare it a dictatorship and be over and done with it. You know, that's what it's always been anyway. But just declare it and I enact martial law, declare dictatorship. He's going to be backed by the elitists and the whole new world order if he doesn't get elected. And you just got to read back through all these executive orders that's going on and the way he's wording things and what's happening. You know, control of the internet, control of the airways. They have control of everything. They got all the Muslim prime candidates and big corporation people appointed to every important position you can think of, from FCC, Food and Drug Administration, you name it. All these appointed people are all been appointed by the elitists to further their agenda. People have to wake up. Your vote is meaningless.
What is a corporation? I mean, everybody bashes the corporations, but a corporation is just a group of people working to build a certain product. I mean, you look at Starbucks. They were started in a one-room warehouse, and now they're a major corporation because their product was more successful than anybody else. Corporations are not evil in and of themselves.
All right, I have no problem with that, except for the fact that America is a corporation. The United States is a corporation.
Had this past election not gone the way it did, I would have agreed with you 100% because I was of the opinion that all Obama has to do is declare martial law. But you know what? I think Obama's policies have awakened the sleeping giant. And they talked about the Reagan Revolution and how Reagan awakened the silent majority. I think Obama has done more good in awakening the American people to understand that we do have a voice. It may take longer than 8 years in order to rid a lot of these people, these appointees. But with the right people and the fact that the people understand that we can elect individuals who have America's interest at heart, irrespective of where you come from. Excuse me. I don't believe as much of that anymore. I think Obama sees the writing on the wall, and had he not brought in Daley to, and here's the word again, sanitize his presidency, I would have said that he could have paved his way to dictatorship. But you got rid of Pelosi, and you had a sweeping vote for the GOP in the House, and then the second phase is going to be the Senate. And I think the people understand what the score is. That's my opinion.
Yeah, but you also got to realize.
I understand about the David Rockefellers and all those guys.
Oh, no.
I really,
nope. I'm not even going down that path at the moment. But what I'm saying is, you know, we talk about the popular vote, okay? And so far we've been lucky, and that's been the case, like you said. But legally and technically,
years.
The only votes that count are your electoral votes.
Right. And it's the popular vote's been dictating the electoral votes. We had one instance where it did not.
Right. It's supposed to. Okay. The only time in history it didn't was the Al Gore.
No, it was before that. It was John Adams.
No, I think actually that was off by just a couple of points. But I think I got to look again. But I looked up an article that listed all the votes and all the, you know, and how it went and all that all worked. I actually did that one time and did a research on it. And, yeah, I think the only time it hit, the other one was real close by within a couple of votes, but it still was the popular. The only one who ever lost the popular vote was Al Gore. Thank God he did, but...
Thank God he did his right.
Right, because the people were a bunch of dummies, but that voted that for that... But anyway, so far it's been good, okay? We've been very lucky in that aspect. And I say lucky because we haven't had a president like Obama before. We haven't had a president that's been basically molded since birth by the elites to do what he's doing. And they have, you know, everything in the world, I think, is invested in this one man as far as the New World Order or whatever you want to put a name on it, which every president refers to it as the New World Order when actually it's the Old World Order. But, you know, a nice fancy new name, you know, put the word new in there. Everybody thinks it's something, you know, it's a conspiracy. And yet every president since the beginning of time has talked about it. It's all about they're all communists, you know, and the planks are all filled. All the ducks are in a row. They got their people in power. And just, if nothing else, we're facing some very, very interesting times over the next couple of years. And I'm going to be keeping a very close eye on it all because it's scary.
We'll continue this discussion tomorrow on my part. I have to split, but guys, I enjoyed it. And I'm not, I just got to go. I really do. I'm out of my destination.
So. All right, you me too. Home, don't forget to stop at the store on the way home.
That's where I'm at.
All right, boys. Same time, same place tomorrow.
Good night, guys.
Good night.